comment on these first two readings. It's important to notice that Isaiah, together with other writers in the Hebrew Bible, refers to God in feminine terms. We got God as mother here. And this is really important because we have sexified God, much to our own disadvantage, I think. And this passage from the Corinthians that Jim read is stunning, I think. I have always been profoundly struck by the fact that Paul doesn't even judge himself. What does that mean? He's indifferent? No. At least two things are being claimed. First of all, he does not know himself all that well, just like none of us knows our motivation. But that's inconsequential compared to his relationship with God. He's held with God. And that kind of magnificent freedom, where I'm not constantly navel-gazing, picking at myself, is what Jesus was all about. But finally, this terrifying reading from the Sermon on the Mount. I think I was premature last week when I said, love your enemies is the litmus test of the Christian life. I think this is probably closer to the bone, this whole business of serving two masters, of our relationship with money. Because I think even the business of loving your enemies is probably rooted in the fact that the enemy are those who threaten my sphere of possessions. That what I own, what I have, who I am. And so the question, however, the same question that was raised last week's reading, where is my heart, really? Where is my heart? And what is my life really anchored? You know? I think it is absolutely true that for me, and probably for most of us, most of the time, it's anchored in precisely this, the sphere of possessions, what we own, what we can claim. And the problem, of course, is that leads us to a profound and intractable misidentification of who we really are. Who am I really? This person, Trojak, who is he? His African art collection, his CDs, his degrees, his collection of books, his house, his dogs, his kids, his grandkids. No. Those are all secondary. They're all peripheral, as a matter of fact. But it's a much larger question of who I really am. So I want, however, to keep extending the tentacles of my identity, fixing on something that I own, and saying, that's who I am. That's who, you want to know who I am? That's who I am. And we live in a time, of course, where this ought to be glaringly evident. I mean, we have Bernie Madoff in jail with his $60 billion extortion. We have the bankers, again, collecting today, even at this late date, when the gap between the wealthy and the poor in North America is larger than it's ever been. The bankers are still collecting their million-dollar bonuses. What drives that? I mean, that's writ large. Huh? I don't have a million-dollar bonus. But I can see in myself the same kind of tendency that if I have enough money, then I will somehow secure my existence. The problem, of course, is the same. I exclude others. I exclude God to the extent that I do that. I'm not available. There's that wonderful Moyer speech, which I hope everybody was able to get. I put the sign, do not disturb, on my life. I do not want to be worried. And we see it written in even grosser terms in the case of Gaddafi today, who will call in Africans from sub-Saharan Africa to murder his own people in the name of his own ego, his own power, his own possessions. I recognize the impulse. It's not alien. I understand Muammar Gaddafi. And there's a little of Ronald Trojak in Muammar Gaddafi, or a little more Muammar Gaddafi and Ronald Trojak, maybe more than a little. So what does this powerful text enjoin on us? The setting up of questions, I think. Who am I really? Where is my heart really rooted? And again, as always, as I said last week, and the same thing is true no matter where we pick up the scriptures, that it ought to drive us, perhaps kicking and screaming, to a more ardent search for God. Because as Paul says, who we are is hidden with Christ in God, and that's the only real self there is. And everything else is artifice and counterfeit.